This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
I'm ready.
All right, don't get so close to the mic.
I don't know what you're saying to me right now.
That's fine. Right there. Right there. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, guys, welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. And guess who's here? My co-host, the greatest co-host of all time, my daughter Lila. She's back. We're going to play around. We're going to fool around. We're going to talk about some things. Before we get into it, let's just talk about a little bit of business. First things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is a grinder for knife makers and metal workers and whoever you are. If you're removing material, this is the machine for you. And if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you'll get 10% off of everything. Don't sleep on it. And they also have power hammers that they're starting to build, and they're taking orders for that, among other things. Definitely go check out my friends over at Broadbeck Ironworks. Stop playing. Next are my friends at Evenheat. Evenheat are the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. If you're making knives, if you're making hand tools that need to be hardened, if you're making anything that needs to be hardened, you got to get yourself an Evenheat. And if you go to evenheat-kiln.com, you can see what's going on. The tap control, the solid state drive, I'm telling you, man, ain't nothing better. I mean, I swear to God, it's like if you're making stainless steel, if you're doing Damascus, if you're having specific steels, this is the stuff for you. Get yourself a kiln. Stop playing. I hear all this nonsense. Are you guys fooling around? Stop fooling around. Get yourself an Evenheat. Evenheat-kiln.com. And next thing is I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. That's MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. For all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat treating ovens, anvils, everything you need to get started, resupplied. They're in Canada, but they ship everywhere. And this stuff is awesome. They have great steel selection. I just got some hex bars of 1080 to forge integrals. Stuff is sick. Awesome. And the prices are right, and the shipping is great. And one other thing is on the 17th of August, Maritime Knife Supply is sponsoring the Great Lakes Custom Knife Show, and it's happening on August 17th in Ontario, Canada's largest knife show, located on the picturesque shores of Lake Huron, featuring some of the best talent in the Canadian knife-making community. Go to Great Lakes Custom Knife Show to visit for more information. Don't miss it, guys. Don't miss it. You're playing if you miss it. So Maritime Knife Supply, those are my friends. Lawrence is the man, and we will be talking to him soon. At some point, I hope, anytime he wants. All right, next time we'll talk to him, and we'll get him on board, and we'll figure out what's going on with MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge. That's Sam Evans and Jeff Groz. They're making the Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise. This vise is built in the heart of Texas, and their vises are there they were designed to take your handle finish to a whole new level with features you won't find anywhere else. I'm telling you, you can hand sand your blades with comfort. If you got an integral bolster, no problem. If you got a curved blade, no problem. They got it all squared away. And then you turn it around, you stick the knife into the end, you bingo, bango, bongo, you're finishing the handle, you're all squared away. So go to TrojanHorseForge.com and put in the promo code FULLBLAST10 and get 10% off everything, including their T4 Sentinel oil, their handle test, pressed attachment, and everything else. Definitely check out my friends over at TrojanHorseForge.com. Tell them I sent you. Next are my friends at Baker Forge and Tool. That's BakerForge.com. They are the makers of beautiful exotic steels. I use it all the time. Copper, my bronze, my tiger, my all this stuff. This stuff is awesome. It's all this really easy to work with clad material. You have a carbon steel core. You have cladding. There's usually some copper in there or some nickel or something like that. I just got a piece with Apex Ultra in there. And let me tell you, it was easy to work with. It was soft to cut. It was all annealed, ready to go. And you can use the shittiest bandsaw you have, and you're going to get that stuff ready to go. Don't worry about that. And for heat treating, their website has all the details on how to heat treat it easily and safely, and you will get the best product. If you're a stock removal guy, this is the stuff for you. I've said it before. I've said it again. That copper my gives you this, like, idea. You can have a few, when you're grinding, you're pre-grinding, you can see where the core is because the copper helps you kind of figure out where things are. It's actually really, really easy to use. And when you're etching it, you use what? You use gator piss. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, gator piss. GatorPiss. Stuff is the best etching on the market. And if you go to BakerForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you're going to get all your your gator piss needs and everything else. You pull full blast, get you 10% off. And guess what? If you don't want to go there, you want to go somewhere else, you can also go to Texas Farrier Supply. Texas Farrier Supply is one of the best. My friends Evan and the guys at Texas Farrier Supply have all the supplies for farriers and blacksmiths and knife makers and stuff like that. And they also carry they carry the gator piss. And if you use promo code KNIFETALK10 over at TexasFarrierSupply.com, you're going to get 10% off there. All the hyperlinks, all these deals are in the show notes, so go check out what's going on over there. And definitely get yourself some of that gator piss, get yourself some of that copper mine, bronze mine, sand mine, mosaic, Damascus, all that stuff over at BakerForge.com. And then put in the promo code FULLBLAST10 for their full blast for them, 10% off. Go to Texas Ferry Supply, get yourself some gator piss, among other things. Get yourself that Rhino Wet, whatever you need, and go get yourself it. And use Knife Talk 10 over Texas Ferry Supply. Like I said, all the hyperlinks are in the show notes where you're reading this. I want to thank my friends at Total Boat, totalboat.com/fullblast, for all your epoxies, for adhesives, paints, primers, polishing compounds. It started out with boaters and DIYers, and then they realized makers can use this stuff too, because you guys are working on some funny projects. So you got to make them float. You know, like boat guys need to make sure their boats float, and they use the Total Boat to keep the boats afloat. And if it keeps the boat afloat, then they're going to get your lousy project squared away. You know what I'm saying? And I'm using two-part epoxy for all my handle scales, and I really, really like it. And I'm also using the Fathom Thick Set for making hybrid handle material. So definitely check out what's going on over at totalboat.com/fullblast. Use that link. And you get me street cred, and you get a couple bucks taken off the bill at the end, I guess. I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure that's the case. I'm a huge fan of Total Boat. And stop it. I mean, Keith Deese and Derek Fromalden, Keith Johnson, Keith Mitchell, Jimmy DiResta, they're all using Total Boat. It's good enough for them. It's good enough for you. Stop playing. Jesus. Next are my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. That's G.L.Hansen & Sons. That's GCarta.BigCartel.com. GCarta is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure. Under pressure. You get yourself some Ripple Cut. You get some Tuxini by Mikey. You get some Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm GCarta. You get some of them Bofa. You get some Pheasant. You get some Colorama. You get some Hoopla. Amazing colors and razzle dazzle for all your projects. Easy to work with and finish. And then they're going to be used. They made the one that I got to name one called the Electric Fuzz. And there's going to be more and more and more. So I'm starting to get messages from people who are specifically asking for what they're saying to me, what GL Hansen & Sons steel handle material do you have? So go check it out at gcarta.bigcartel.com. Once again, link is in the show notes. So don't stop. Just stop playing. Jesus. Next are my friends at Total Boat. My bad. Next are my friends at Tormek, celebrating 50 years of being in biz with the Black TA sharpening system. This water-cooled sharpening system is the best, and ain't nothing better than the Tormek. I'm telling you, it's made me a better knife maker, and I'm going to be going out to Sweden to hang out with the Tormek guys, and we're going to have them on at some point. I'm looking forward to seeing how their factory is, and we're going to talk about sharpening. We're going to talk about what people are doing right, what people are doing wrong. You don't have to use the jigs. The jigs make life easy. You can get comfortable and not use the jigs like I do. But I tell you what, the Tormek will make you a better knife maker. You will not have undercut on the end of your knife. And a lot of you knife makers are saying, some of you knife makers are saying, what's undercut? And a lot of people are saying, I get undercut all the time. When you use the belts all the time, you end up with, trust me, I've been there. You get undercut at the heel. If you use a Tormek, the chances of you getting undercut are very slim, because it's a water-cooled sharpening system. It's keeping your knife, your blade, and your edge cool, and it's also polishing it, and it's taking material off, but not too fast, but fast enough. So definitely check out what's going on. Go to Tormek.com or at Tormek_sharpening on Instagram, and definitely tell them I said hello, and we're going to be seeing them in Sweden without my next guest, My next guest is, of all the people, this is like 179 episodes, I have a short list of people who are fan favorites, and Lila, my daughter, is definitely she's definitely, without question, cracked the top five, but in my mind, she's number one. Lila Fader, what's going on?
What's up?
How
are
you?
What's good?
What's good? What's good? What's good, homie?
What's good?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm hanging out. It's super hot. I feel like just about a year ago, we also did a podcast episode. This is definitely bringing me back.
We did an episode that was lost because we had audio issues. And I'm
I
hoping...
fucked up the headphones, basically.
I didn't say it. Wait, I didn't say it.
I'm telling the truth, guys.
Well, don't worry about that. And you know, you listen, I'm just grateful you're here. And last time we were talking, you had graduated high school and you were going off to college. You now are back from the first year, your freshman year in college out in California. How was it?
It was amazing. I mean, I just feel like, I don't know. I think
get closer to the mic.
Sorry. I think by the end of high school, I thought I knew so many things. And then I ended my first year of college and I was like, damn, I don't know anything. But it definitely, like, I realized that there is so much more out there than maybe what I thought there had been, you know, in the past. So it's super exciting. I really love California. Sorry. And I'm just really excited to keep going. Like, it sucks to be so far from you guys, but it's also, like, so exciting to be in a new place. So, you know.
Did it meet your expectations? I mean, I know that the college you wanted to get into, you applied early, you really were, you had your heart set on it. And I remember that day you got in, and it was one of the highlights of my life.
I think it was like on my birthday.
It was on your birthday. It was on your birthday?
Yeah, it was on your birthday. Crazy.
And I definitely remember you had your heart set on this. It was like this, and that's the scary part. I mean, you know, usually when you go to, you know, you apply to colleges, you get like a group of them. And then you don't really apply early. And I think that I was definitely like, I don't know, that's the fader in me. It's just like,
I know, expect
the worst and you're gonna be happy when it doesn't happen. So I was like, your mom and I were walking the dogs probably like half an hour before, or an hour before they said that they were going to send the notice. And I remember walking the dog and we were all a wreck the day. What I remember was telling your mom, are we ready for I don't believe she's going to be disappointed, but are we prepared for the disappointment?
I know. I remember it like very, very well. I feel like there was just the whole year before getting into college was just like pure anxiety. Like, is my essay good enough? Am I going to get in? Because when I applied for college, it was like one of those really weird like post-COVID years when like acceptance rates were all weird and like you didn't have to take any like standardized tests and stuff, and it was just like it was super hard to predict for like the first time in a long time. And so, you know, mom was very strategic about it and she really helped me like figure it out. But I mean, it just worked out. I don't know, there was definitely times where I was like, I'm definitely not going to get in. And then there were certain times where I was like, I feel like I could be going somewhere possibly better. But it's been, after a year, I can definitely say that I feel like it's a great fit for me. And, you know, I worked fucking hard, man. Like,
yeah, you did.
Like, to put it into perspective, I feel like my whole first year of college was like almost easier than like my last 2 years of high school.
Really?
Just like I had so much work to do when I was in high school, but like now it's like what I didn't realize about college is like you're not just doing like stupid stuff, you're like thinking critically and like it's so much more interesting and I feel more like energized to want to learn and stuff. And I feel like after just a year of college, I've been like, learning is awesome and I want to do it for like a long time, whereas in high school I didn't feel that way.
Let's back up a second. You say you're not. Are you feeling are you feeling less challenged as you were than
no,
high school?
No.
Because I'm about to make some calls.
No, no, I'm not. I feel like.
Are you dogging it, dude?
No, in high school.
Are you dogging it?
No.
Tell the truth.
I'm not dogging it, guys. No, come on now. So annoying.
Right. So.
Listen, high school, I did some dumb things just to make it to college, you know, that's how it is these days. In college, I get to do things that are more interesting, I guess take, like, interesting classes, and, you know. So I'm learning more, but it's just, like, different. It's better.
I know that the summer before college, there was a lot of anxiety, too, because you know, you're changing environments. You're no longer going to be in, you know, Westchester, New York, and you're going to be out in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget the day we moved you in, and it was like, you know, I was for sure very proud of you and excited, but at the same time, you know, if I'm being completely honest, I was a little sad, but at the same time, I was so proud that you had made this decision and you'd gotten everything squared away and then you'd figured it all out and you had made the decision, and we were a little bit nervous that you were going to have, you know, homesickness and stuff like that. Did it meet or exceed your expectations? How is it different than what you thought it was going to be like?
Well, I will say I like vividly remember you guys dropping me off at school, and I vividly remember like saying bye to you guys, like right before you guys were about to fly home and stuff. And I was, you know, I had my new roommate and I had like met a couple people online, and it was definitely one of those like moments I feel like I'll remember forever, being like, damn, like things are changing right now. And I feel like there was just so much exciting stuff my first semester. Like, you know, I've grown up going to the city and stuff, but it's so different when you like live just like somewhere different than like your family. I don't know, like I honestly wasn't homesick at all my first semester. Like, it took a while for me to feel like, damn, like I miss home, you know. But then like when I think when I came home to visit for Thanksgiving, I was definitely like kind of sad, and I had like, you know, moments, but for the most part I was just like pumped.
The scariest part there's two moments that were pretty exciting and scary. The first moment was when we went to orientation, and I was saying to your mother, listen, we need to get the fuck out of here. We can't stay around all the time. I said, there needs to be like clean break, because all of a sudden it gets, you know, you need to drop her off. I mean, the way I would, you know, if it was up to me, I would have dropped you off and just left. But we went to all these dinner and then a meeting, and we got to, I was really impressed with, who is it? He was the guy who we saw in the car on the way out. You remember what I'm talking about?
No.
All right. So this guy made this big speech about, he basically said, are you guys ready? And he's talking to the parents and he's talking to the kids and stuff like that. And he says, you're ready. You're ready for this. And you know it's going to be scary because you're going to be away from your family and stuff like that. And I remember we were all walking out towards the back to, and then mom and I were going to go off to the hotel and leave. And we're going to leave you alone. We're walking to the exit. And the same guy who made that speech, I forgot what position he was in. He was high up in the college. And he drove up, you know, he just happened to be leaving when we're driving. And he stops at the stop sign where we're walking. We're saying goodbye. And he's, you know,
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
I gave to him, I said, that was a great speech. Thank you so much. And I remember he turns to you, and he obviously knows that you're an incoming freshman, and he just points at you, he says, are you ready? And you said, yeah, and we all started crying, and you know.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
I remember that. Like, that's exactly what I was talking about.
That was bananas.
That was, like, a brutal.
That was
like,
brutal.
It was, like, brutally good and bad.
Yeah.
I just remember, like, that moment, just like, oh, my God.
When he did that, when he stuck his finger out and he said to you, are you ready? That was badass. I mean, that was fucking badass. And I was just like, yeah, let's get the fuck out of here. I turned to your mother and I grabbed her away. Like, let's get the fuck out of here. And I remember
like
walking
the sun
her down.
Was setting and like,
was,
you guys are walking down this hill. It was
God, the sun setting.
Real.
She was a wreck and you were a wreck.
Dramatic shit.
But the worst part was you called us up a week later to say you had COVID.
dude.
That was like...
That was fucking brutal.
Brutal. That was nuts because, like, all right, so the first week of orientation, she's all cross country and we can't... I mean, that was the big thing that people would say to me. How do you feel about she's across country? So if there's a problem, there's no, you can't do anything. Like, yeah. If you went to some, you went to Columbia or something like that, I could just take the train down. I could see in 45 minutes. Something happens to you while you're across the country. There's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
So you send Hillary a message saying you have COVID, and all of a sudden, like a week after we drop you off, I get a text from your mother saying Lila's got COVID, and I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah, that was bad.
Tell me the ordeal of what you had to go through your first week of orientation with COVID.
Okay,
and by the way, how many people had COVID on the campus?
It must have been, like, looking back, quite a few. Like, basically, you know, the first week before classes start, they have all the freshmen kind of go before the upperclassmen and, like, you know, feel around the school, like, do some, like, guest lectures and, you know, whatever. And so my friend and I had been, like, hanging out the whole week, and, like, we had been hanging out with a few other people, and we realized that we had COVID. And luckily we were able to, like, sort out, like, the rooms so we could both quarantine together, because, like, by that point there weren't a lot of guidelines for quarantining, I guess. But my roommate, like, she had a hard time with it. I felt so bad for her.
Of course. It's nervous making.
It was so stressful because it was, like, we had only known each other for, like, a week and a half, and it was like, how am I supposed to be, like, you know, hey, like, I got COVID, like, what are you gonna do, you know? So it was just like being, like, dropped right into, like, I don't even know, it was just like, yeah, dropped right into a problem, first week away from my parents, at least like a 6-hour flight away from my parents, and then having to be like, okay, I gotta deal with my roommate, I gotta, like, make sure I'm healthy for classes, and, like, we're not really, the school isn't giving us, like, places to quarantine, so I gotta figure out where to go so, like, no one else gets sick.
And let's be fair, your roommate was awesome.
Yeah,
and
she was awesome. She was great. It just sucked.
And the fact remains is you found another person with COVID who's a friend, and you guys bunked together.
Yeah.
And, like, you were, like, locked in a room with this other person for six days.
I just can't even. She also, it was so funny. She had, like, the worst room. It was, like, you know, freshman dorm. So it was, like, her window was, like, covered by, like, trees. So it was dark all the time.
Oh.
And it was tiny. And it just smelled so bad because we had been stuck in there for a week.
Farting.
We were eating, farting and eating shitty pizza. Like, fucking Domino's. You know what? I this is my fucking thing with California. I had one pizza in my entire time in California, and I swear to God, it made me sicker. Like, it was the worst pizza I'd ever had in my whole goddamn life. And, it was brutal. It was fucking terrible. And I think I ended up having, like, a few classes, like, on Zoom or something, because I was still sick by the time classes started. It was so rough. And it was just, like, I remember when we were sick, like, thinking about all the people who were, like, you know, out and, like, meeting new people and making friends, and it just felt like we were, like, behind, but, you know, it ended up being fine.
Well, number one on the pizza thing, our boy Ryan, who, crazy enough, one of your friends saw somebody walking around.
Yeah, it was the same person. It was the same person I quarantined with. She was like, hey, I saw someone wearing a Fader Knives sweatshirt down whatever.
It was a good friend of ours, Ryan, who has given me instructions on where to send you for pizza. So we'll get you squared away with that. Don't worry about that.
Perfect.
And I'm not, you know what? I'm not mad. Frankly, if I'm being 100% honest, I'm not mad that you're mad about the pizza out there. It's,
you know,
like, you had your chance.
Yeah.
You had your chance. You could have gone to school in New York. So you got to take it.
I accept that. It's like,
okay, good.
I'm also the school of thought that's like, I don't really know if I need to eat pizza if I'm in California because there's so many other things that are, like, better there. You know, like,
you.
It's just, it's not the place to be for pizza.
Look at you.
Know?
You. That's some rational thinking right there.
Thank you.
Look at you. So you finished quarantine, you're back in your room, you're tell me the vibes of California living, California campus, you no longer have winters, you don't have the fall anymore. What was the vibe, the LA vibe? What was it like?
Well, first of all, I will say that, I mean, there's not necessarily a winter, but, like, definitely around, like, January, February, it's really dark and cold. And, but I will say, it makes it, the nice weather makes it real hard to get stuff done. I have to admit. I am getting things done. I made the dean's list, you know, I'm a hard worker.
Oh, let's stop. Stop for a second, just to let everybody know. Glyla got the dean's list this year, so
two semesters in a row, lest
there be any question of, like, fooling around too much. Maybe you should consider one more class, but at the same time, like you said, it's not as hard as high school, so maybe you need a little, you know. I'm not gonna tell you what to do.
That actually, so
you what?
I didn't say that. I didn't say it was easier.
All right, I'm just like, you know, nerd. You know, this is supposed to be, you know, we're having a conversation here. I can't just be like. You know, I kind of fool around a little bit. I'll tell you one thing that annoyed the shit out of me was, and this is just, you know, because I'm in New York and it's kind of like, when it's dreary here, it's the worst. You know, now we're in the beginning of August. Towards the end of August, I'm going to start to get depressed because I don't like the fall, because the fall is the harbinger of winter. And the winter to me is just like, the only thing I like about winter is I like wearing a vest, but that's about it. I mean, other than that, I'm like not into, you know, fall and winter at all. But I remember talking to you, and the great thing is you guys have all these amazing hikes where you can see all of Los Angeles, and you have these beautiful things to see, these ecosystems and stuff like that. And there's a lot of hiking, which I liked a lot. I remember I was on the phone with you, and your campus has fruit trees all over the place, which is annoying. So, like, you walk to campus and there's like a lime tree, and then you were telling me there's like pomegranate trees and all these fruit trees all the campus, which is so obnoxious. And then you were calling me up and we were talking, and you said, "Oh, I just went on this hike and there was a banana tree on the hike."
Yeah.
And I was like, "You know what? I don't want to hear any more about your fucking banana trees." We didn't sign up for you telling me about your banana tree hikes. I ain't interested in your banana tree hikes. You get it back in them books. You know what I'm saying? Banana trees. I was like, oh God, I'm standing here. I'm looking at like some fucking weeds and like brown leaves. And you're like fruiting around with your banana tree hikes. So annoying. Wouldn't you be annoyed if the roles were reversed?
I'd be so pissed. The thing about New York is, like, 9 months out of the year, it just sucks.
You got a point there, kid. You got a point that you know what? That is exactly the right amount of, that is like the exact right amount of months. 9 months out of the year, it sucks.
Yeah, exactly. And then
those 4 months, the first two, you're excited. But then the second two, you realize the jig is up.
Yeah, it's brutal. I don't know. It's pretty, I've been saying this. It's so hard to be sad when the weather's so nice, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
You know what? You deserve. That was the thing that your mother and I felt in regards to you going to college. When I was applying for colleges, my parents wouldn't let me go west at all. Like, I wanted to go to Colorado. Like, I had friends in Colorado. I loved skiing. I really wanted to go to Colorado. And that was forbidden. And I even wanted to go to some schools in Florida, and they were like, that's forbidden. So, like, I really had, I didn't have a lot of options. And I know that when your mother and I were bringing you up, I mean, I was brought up on, you know, Park Avenue, you know, right. So it was like, I was living this life of, you know, this New York City is the greatest city on the planet. Don't fight me about it. I mean, period.
Right.
So I already had all that. So for me, watching you grow up in the town we were in, which was, you know, you've had a great life in here in this town, and we've had a great time. But at the same time, it's like there's a lot more to it. So your mom and I were very much along the lines of, you find the school that you want to go to, and if you can get in and you really like it and it really means a lot to you, you should do it. So we have our feelings on whether or not you're in California or not. And it is when that COVID time was a drag, but at the same time, you got through it. And ultimately, you used your head. The best part was, the most proud I have been of you in regards to your year at school was how really you used your, you know, I don't say all this stuff. I like it when you use your head. You use your head on all these situations, and you've always had very good judgment. So I'm very, like, very proud about it.
Thank you. But I also, I mean, just to cut in here, I feel like that is something we have talked about for, like, forever, is like using your head. Like, that was always like a big part of the, like, family conversation, and something I feel like you would tell me to do a lot.
What's the exact quote, though?
Wait. Don't let the boat sink or something.
No. The exact quote is "use your fucking head."
Oh. What was that?
Oh, don't tank.
Yeah, don't tank.
Don't tank. Yeah, don't tank. We would say when her grades were really good and she got into college, I would say from that day on, I say don't tank because the colleges are going to want that final grades, and if you blow it now, you're going to be out. So don't tank is a situation, but use your fucking head is.
Yeah, use your fucking head is number one.
Yeah, that's a good one too, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it helps. It helps.
It does help. And you know what? That's another thing that, like, going so far away and, like, I could really only reach you guys through the phone.
Right.
Is I had to, like, I feel like I was in so many situations where I just, like, had to kind of deal with it myself. I, like, couldn't talk endlessly to you guys about it, you know?
Right.
And I used my fucking head.
Yeah. No, that's great. And I'm, you know, obviously there have been some situations where, you know, you're in college, there's experimenting and you're going to be around other kids who are not being parented and you're going to see a lot of people with a lot of different opinions. And, you know, this is the time to be idealistic. This is the time to kind of like, you know, say and do things and eat things and be in a situation where, you know, you're not getting like, you know, your parents aren't looking over your shoulder. We all knew that. I remember I really wanted to get a tattoo super bad when I was about 14. And my mother would get me fake tattoos. And then I'd just cover my arms with fake tattoos. And then when I got to college, it was just like, well, you know, I'm in Ohio, they're in New York, and what are they going to do? They're going to run down the tattoo parlor while I'm sitting in the chair. So I was just like, A, can't do anything about it, so I'm going to go do it. So I turned 18, got my first tattoo, I was terrified. But part of me was just like, what are they going to do? You're so far away. There's nothing you can do about it. And I respect that. They didn't respect it, but I respected the fact that, like, you know, listen, we're here. We're out here. We out here. We in the streets. We out here, baby.
we in the streets of Ohio. Hell yeah.
Yeah. I ever tell you about that first tattoo?
Yeah, but let's hear it again.
God. There was a guy by the name of Tattoos by Ernie. And it was the only, and this is 1994. So it was really like, this is the only people that tattoos were like rock stars on MTV. You don't even know about MTV, which is horrifying. So like, you know, rock guys had tattoos and stuff. And I went over to Tattoo Bad. And we found Tattoos by Ernie. And it was like run down. It was like, I mean, you know, the safety standards of tattoos now are totally different. He had Ernie had a dog, a Rottweiler. And he had a parrot that only could say cocksucker. That was the only thing that the parrot could say. So we're sitting there. It's freezing. And I'm just terrified. I'm just prepared for my father's going to kill me. I'm like, well, I've already made the decision. I put the money down. He put it on. He started in. And I almost passed out in the chair. He could tell that. He says, here, he picked me up. And he gave me a Coke. He says, go wash your face and drink this Coke. And I said, how did you know I wasn't feeling well? I said, I could feel you're very clammy. I could feel it. And he says, and frankly, I didn't want to pick your sorry ass up off the floor.
Oh,
I'm like, all right, there you go. Tattoos by Ernie. Only the best customer service. You know what I'm saying?
So when you got back to campus, how did everyone think you were like a...
I mean, 1994, not a lot of kids were getting tattoos. I mean, not as many as there are now.
Did you get street cred?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, for a certain degree. I mean, it was pretty intense. I mean, it was pretty wild to a certain degree. But then all of a sudden, everyone getting tribal tattoos. And next thing you know, everybody's like, you know, all these white guys are Shaka Zulu. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, however, shout out to the tribal tattoos, which paid for a lot of electrical bills at tattoo parlors. So have you thought about, you know, the hardest part is, have you thought about what you're considering? And don't, you don't have to say it, you don't want to. Have you thought about what you want to major in?
Yeah. Well, I would definitely say, like, going into college, I wasn't entirely sure on what I wanted to do. And, like, my first semester, like, I didn't really, like, take a calculated, like, look at what classes I should be taking.
Yeah.
Whatever. I did some exploring. It's what you're supposed to do. Anyways, so, now I'm going into my sophomore year, so this is the year I kind of, like, decide what my major is. So I think I'm going to do something along the lines of, like, environmental justice and, like, safety and that kind of thing. And then I'm also considering minoring in either, like, food sciences or like critical theory and social justice.
So environmental policy is like, what would you do with that?
Well, so there's a lot of different things. One of which is like, you could definitely become like an attorney through that and do like environmental law and stuff, which, you know, would be awesome and would be super important. But there's also, like, you can go down so many different routes with that kind of stuff. You know, could definitely do stuff in, like, the food industry with, like, you know, dealing with, like, food waste and stuff. Or, like, something that, like, I'm kind of interested in is urban planning and stuff and helping to create, like, architecture and stuff and just public spaces that are better for walking and stuff and not, like, as car-centric. And if there's so many different things you can do, but I'm interested in most, if not all of them right now. So it's going to be, I don't know. I have a feeling I'm going to end up doing a lot of different things.
So
probably within that realm.
So we can also come to the conclusion that law school is on the table.
Maybe.
On the table. Just say it's on the table.
It's on the table. Fine.
You hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Fucking did it. I fucking did it. It's on the table. That's good enough for me. You hear that? You hear that? That's the sound of a proud father's heart. I got a lawyer up in this piece. I'm with you. Now let's. Speaking of the food sciences.
Okay.
I want to talk. You had a great year, right?
Yeah.
You met new friends. Before we head into the summer, you were sending me a pile of like. Have you eaten great food out in California?
I've definitely had some really good things. I will say, being a college student, I'm probably not having, like, the best food I could be having.
You mean
but I've had some
on the
good
campus?
Things. Yeah. Like, wait, you're saying good
I'm
food
saying,
out in California or
I'm saying
at
out
school?
In California, out off campus.
I've had some good things off campus, yeah. I've had some pretty good things. I will definitely say, like, you know what I was saying before, like, you don't go to California for pizza. I've had, like, really good burritos and tacos and that kind of stuff. What else? There was one really good place I was thinking of before.
Was it a Taiwanese place or something?
Yes.
You took mom to,
that place
right?
is fucking awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah. And damn. When you come visit me, I definitely want to take you there. You would love it. It's awesome because it's, like, pretty cheap. So, like, you know, whenever someone has, like, a birthday or something, we always go there. Like, when my friend's parents come to town, we all go out to dinner there. It's super fun. Yeah, it's great.
And you like California?
Yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, like, I've only seen a few parts of it, but I'm really happy with, like, where I am. So, you know, I'm definitely going to finish my next 3 years of college. I don't know what I'm going to do when I'm done. I might stay there for, like, a little bit. I might come back.
Just give me some hope.
All right.
You know,
strike
it's like,
the record, Your Honor. Strike the record. Give me some hope that you might just come back for a
I'm
going
to come back to New York for sure.
Right,
for sure.
Yeah, that a girl.
Atta some
girl.
Point.
That a girl.
Sometime.
What I'm happy about mostly is that you had a really good year with your roommate and to the point where you guys are going to be roommates again. I think that's a
yeah,
very
definitely.
Valuable situation.
Definitely.
I mean, it is hard learning how to live with another person, considering you've had your own room for your whole life. You
yeah, I'm an only child, you know. And, like, I don't know, it was definitely, like, an adjustment, but, like, she's, like, better than I could have hoped for, which is, like, the best. You know, we just were, like, we kind of went into it, because we weren't friends, like, immediately. It was kind of, like, you know, we just want to be respectful, and then we became friends, like, over time.
That's great.
Yeah, she's super cool.
I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm very, very happy about that. Shout out to your roommate.
Shout out to my roommate.
Now, listen. You one of the things that you're very organized, and I'll take a little bit of credit for that. I think your mother is far more organized than I am in regards to, you know, your life and her life. And, you know, I'm very impressed by the fact that you applied for summer jobs in the winter.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about the summer job you were thinking about doing that you
the
ended
summer?
Up getting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I've always been, like, really into baking and stuff. And you know what? I was talking to one of my, like, good childhood friends. She came out to visit me in school. And we were just, this is before the winter. So, or, no, this is after the winter, when I had like applied, I worked at a bakery over the summer. That's what we're talking about.
You worked at a bakery last summer.
This current summer.
Yeah, but you also worked at a bakery last summer.
No, I didn't.
Or two summers ago.
Yes.
Right. So you worked at a separate bakery two summers ago. Okay.
Yeah, I worked at a bread bakery two summers ago. Now I work at more of like viennoiserie type stuff. But anyways,
French pastries, right?
Yeah, okay. French pastries and stuff. But my friend was just like, you know, it's so funny. Like you would just say to me like, I want to work in a bakery, and now that's like the main job that I like shoot for. It's just, I don't know. It's just funny. I've been wanting to do it for a long time. You know, I've worked at like coffee shops and stuff, but like, yeah. So this summer I have been working at like a French pastry spot, like, in Westchester, and, it's awesome. Like, it was better than I could have hoped for. I reached out in the winter, and I was able to, like, you know, work there, and it just, like, developed into something more than I could have hoped. Basically, like, I went in there, like, kind of expecting just to do, like, prep work and stuff, but she ended up, like, putting me as the opening baker. So I spent all summer baking croissants. It was awesome. I'd get up at the whole family, you, me and mom, we would get up at 4:30 every morning. You'd set me off to my job and I would just bake for like 6 hours.
I gotta tell you, this baking job has been unbelievable. And I've had a lot of feelings about it because my father was a baker and we're going to talk about the connection. What I like is the best. One of the things that impressed me is your schedule was like we would all wake up at 4:30. You know, we're not the type of people that like sleep through. You got to get up. We're getting up with you. We make your coffee. We make your breakfast. I like to make sure that the car is facing forward going out. I do that with your mother too.
Yeah.
I want to make sure. For some reason, I have this weird habit where I want for you and your mother's car facing out, so when you drive out, you're going forward, and it's
you're a little stitious.
I'm a little stitious, a tiny bit stitious, a little bit stitious.
I like that superstition. I like that one.
It's just a night. You know what? The thing is, going to work kind of sucks, and at least I want to make sure that you guys want to come home. Yeah. So I want to make you breakfast. I want to make your mother breakfast and lunch. I want you guys to leave in an easy way. You don't have to back out into this busy traffic. I feel as though the more you can do to kind of like set you off on the right foot, that the better things happen. And you know, I don't know.
You've been doing that for mom like since I was a
before
baby.
You were born. Before you were born, I've been like making her lunch, making her breakfast, and I don't want to sound like the greatest husband on the earth, but I mean. Look, the fact remains. I mean, I hate to say it, guys, but I mean, you motherfuckers need to recognize, you know, I know what the fuck to do. You know what I'm saying?
Respect.
So the best part is not one time would you come down and like, I'd get up at 4:30, I'd run downstairs, I'd start your coffee, I'd get the dog squared away, the fucking cat squared away, everybody, dealing with everybody in the house, two dogs, a cat, everyone's got to take a leak, everyone's meowing, it's a whole,
Jerry's like losing his mind.
Yeah, the cat is losing his mind, because he knows the food's coming. He's screaming like murder, ridiculous. And then the dog's got to take a leak, and everyone's going, what? It's like 4:30 in the morning, and our house is bananas. And not one time did you ever say, oh, I don't want to go, or I don't want to do this. You came down, you were prepared, you never left late, you always had a good attitude, we always had a couple laughs, and you were very dedicated. And that was, to me, was always very impressive, but was more impressive to me. And the crazy part is I was hesitant to really be positive about this job because I felt as though a lot of these bakeries – they're used to having people in and out. They're used to having job, you know, people are, you know, they don't want to spend too much time with the person because generally speaking, people in the restaurant business are, you know, they're very nomadic. You know, there's not a lot of, you could look at a resume from someone who's been a cook and they could have 10 different places in the course of 3 years, 2 years they worked at. And right. That's normal. You know, it's so there's like a lot of, you know, this job particularly was was perfect for you because she's a young entrepreneur and she's brand new. She hasn't even been open a year. And she was really looking for specific people. And what the best part was she recognized how organized and disciplined you are. And she really gave you a lot of faith and confidence.
Yeah.
And gave you jobs that were like, it wasn't just like, you know, some bullshit jobs. She gave you really great jobs to do. And I think that she really helped with your confidence. What do you think?
Definitely. I mean, like, you know, I'd done some home baking before when I worked at this bread bakery. It was mostly prep work and stuff. So I really hadn't had any like serious like baking experience, like,
right,
like to this level until this summer. And, you know, basically like I came in and for like 2 weeks, she would just like teach me how to open everything. And like specifically we're making like croissants and stuff. And if, I don't know, if anyone knows anything about it, it's like, there's some, most of it is just like trusting your gut. Like you really like, there's just certain points in the process where it's like, you can't measure it. You just have to kind of like be like, this is ready or it's not, you know, like, because what I'm mostly doing is trying to see if the croissants are proofed enough to go in the oven. And, you know, if you underproof them, they're flat. If you underproof them, they're just too small and dense. It's a whole fucking thing. I didn't even know about it until I started.
It's a whole fucking thing. That's another fader. That's another fader.
Yeah. That's, yeah. So anyways, but then it's just like, you know, weeks would go by and then they would start to look really, really good. And it was like, oh, like the egg wash was like the right proportions. And then like I put them in at the right time, so they look like extra big and puffy. It was just like going through it and realizing like these little tricks. And, like, developing these senses for, like, pastry making was just, like, awesome. Because it was, like, you could see it happening, like, over time. And it was so fast that it was happening. And, like, I became really, like, close with her. And, like, we had been, like, figuring out these recipes together. And, like, you know, coming up with new types of things. And, like, working on making the dough, like, really nice. And it was just fucking awesome. And then, like, you know, when 1 week, you know, the humidity is off and the croissants are not right, coming out as nice, it, like, it hurts, you know? So, like, I've become, like, really, like, into the process of it, which is, you know, pretty unexpected, but awesome.
One of the things is she really nurtured you, and it's like I said, I think I felt as though that it was, like, a perfect storm of a great opportunity. Because a lot of places,
yeah,
like,
totally,
like, if it was
totally
a bigger operation, it would have been, you probably would have been lost in the mix. And the amazing thing is she really did.
Yeah.
I had nice conversations with her. She's crazy about you. And she said, she would say to me, you know, Lila has the touch. And it's just like, I'm really, really, this is a really great opportunity. And part of me is only afraid that it's few and far between. You're going to have a great opportunity like this in the food service industry. That's my sad part.
I totally agree with you. Well, I mean, you know, I've definitely, like, every other food service job I've had before this has just kind of been, like, you know, being
right,
a cog in the machine, which is, like, you know, how it usually is. I totally, like, understand that, whatever. You know, I've read Anthony Bourdain's
right,
book. I know about these things. And, just, like, with her, it was just, yeah, it was, like, the food is so good. There weren't many people working there, and, like, the possibilities for growth are just so big that, like, I just came in at the right time, and, like, I feel like this is the first job I've had where, like, my capabilities are being met with the right amount of responsibility, you know, which is, like, I don't think it's super common for someone my age and, like, you know, for just, like, a summer job. So it's been, like, definitely, like, the highlight.
Yeah, I'm really, really, I mean, like I said, I mean, the stuff you've been bringing home every time has been delicious. It's like, it's annoying how everything is really, really good. And I'm going to, you know, hopefully I'm going to do something with her and, you know, do some sort of collaboration. I think she's fantastic. And I'm really appreciative of how much responsibility she gave you, because I really do believe that because you were able to kind of take these opportunities and really seize upon them, it really helped with your confidence.
Definitely. Definitely. It's just like, you know, it's also like I love coming home and like I love seeing you guys, but like I'm not super, you know, it's I grew up in this town, like this job gave me something to like look forward to and like put my energy into, and it was just a really great way to see
your labors in the physical manifestation of your labors.
Yeah.
Two episodes ago, I was talking to my friend Noah Vachon, and we were talking about like there was, and I actually talked to you about this, and there was somebody, my guys at Baker Forge that wrote, if you could have anyone in the shop for a day, who'd it be? And I knew, I asked you who you thought I'd want, and you immediately said, yeah, your dad. And we were talking about, I was talking to Noah about my old man, and I would say,
Who did mom think you would want? Jalen Brunson?
She said Uri Hoffe, and then she probably said Jalen Brunson, yeah.
Oh, I thought she said...
She thought I wanted Jalen Brunson. Was it Jalen Brunson? I would like... Jalen Brunson's in the top five. Like... The top five of who I'd want to hang out with. That is hilarious that she thought I want Jalen Brunson. The fucking captain of the New York Knicks. Really, yeah, you know what? He's top... She's pretty close. At first I thought, no, I don't want Jalen Brunson. I want my dad. But I'm just like, yeah... I think Jalen tops the top five of people who I'd want to hang out in the shop. Yeah, she wasn't totally off. See, that's the funny part. Yeah, I was just like, you don't know me at all. I'm like, you know what? Funny. Now that I think about it, you know me pretty good. So what I've been saying to you about this whole thing was my biggest, not regret, but it's sad because, you know, your grandfather, my dad, was an incredible baker. And if he was 20 years younger, let's say he was 25 years younger, 75. If he's alive now, he'd be 101. He'd be 101 right now.
That's wild. Wait, 50, yeah. He was what, 50 when you
That's
were
madness.
Born?
Me,
that's fucking crazy.
That's how that's, I am. If I had a if now. I had a newborn right now, it would be a problem. I don't want to say too much, but it would be, I don't know what the fuck.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Right. But so my old man he had a winery, and he was a very talented home cook. He became friends with a lot of cooks because he was the pioneer of this particular type of wine in the Hudson Valley. So he became very close with the people at the Culinary Institute and cooks and stuff like that. And he ended up becoming friends with Joe Baum, who was the owner of the Rainbow Room. And Joe Baum became one of his very close friends. So the Rainbow Room at Rockefeller Center was one of the most famous restaurants of all time. So he became friends with not only Joe, but he became friends with the chef, Waldy Maloof, and then they just became really good friends. And then Joe and Waldy would come to my dad's for the weekend or something like that. And they came up with this, you know, I don't know how it happened, but all of a sudden every Thursday, my dad would go to the Rainbow Room and he would bake in the bakery. And he became very close with the pastry chef, and the pastry chef loved him. And my dad at the time was, geez, he must have been... he must have been 75. So 75 when he started the Rainbow Room, 74, 75. And he would come into the Rainbow Room, and then they had him making all the banana nut breads. So he'd come in on Thursdays. All the cooks knew him. They all saw him as like he was the father. He's like everybody's father, all the cooks' father. Mm-hmm. They loved him. He's this old guy's coming in, 75 years old in the Rainbow Room. He's wearing the whites, and he's putting on the whites, and he's going in and he's baking with these giant Hobart mixers, and he's making hundreds of banana nut breads. And he loved it because it was something to do, and they didn't pay him, but he just wanted to do it, and he loved doing it. He did it forever, and there was pictures of him with every year there'd be a picture, you know, and he'd be in the picture with all the cooks, and the cooks all loved him. And I remember one story was hilarious. One story is he had a watch that fell off into one of the fucking doughs. He had a watch on before, and now there ain't no watch. He started wearing much cheaper watches after that. So he lost a watch in one of the banana nut breads. That was the big story. And everyone, I said, well, what are you going to do about it? He's like, well, what can we do? We're going to cut in every, there's 100 banana nut breads there. Someone's going to get a fucking good one. Someone's going to get a watch. Someone's going to get a nice watch. And that was number one. But the other crazy part was he ended up getting me a job. So there was one summer where I was the co-check kid at the Rainbow Room, and Dad and I were co-workers. So one summer I was collecting coats at the Rainbow Room, and then he would be in the kitchen. So on Thursdays, he and I would take a break together, which was awesome. But he was an awesome baker, and if he knew, and you far exceed, Like, he was baking a lot of really cool things. I don't think a lot of cool things, but I mean, he was doing all the banana breads for the restaurant. Like I said, 100 fucking, he was right. Like, but that was his level. And then he would be playing with recipes at home, and we did this thing. I think we both came up to the conclusion I said, you should pipe in some cream cheese in the middle. And we called it the Rainbow Room Twinkie or something like that. And all this bullshit. And I just know that if he was 75 now, he would be crazy about you. And he'd want to know everything. He'd want to talk shop, and he'd want to talk about the baking, and he would want to, the fact that you're the only person in the Fader family. I did a little bit of time in a restaurant, but you've been in a kitchen for way longer than I have. When I worked for Charlie Palmer, I wanted to be a cook. They let me cook there 3 nights. And then Charlie's just like, I don't want you here. I want you building the restaurants. So like, I got plucked out of the restaurant. Yeah. I got plucked out of the kitchens. I went to culinary school and I hate it. I have a funny story. Right. We got to tell this story. So I just know that my old man would have been crazy about you. And I think he'd be crazy about you, and he'd be crazy about what I'm doing here. And I just know that there'd be a lot of phone calls. And he'd want to know about the baking, and I know that he'd want to come down, and he'd want to see the croissants, and he'd ask you a million questions. And then I can hear the phone calls of pride about his granddaughter making croissants in the restaurant. Now we got to talk about the croissant story. Got to talk about the croissant story. You know what I'm talking about?
This is like my go-to story. I fucking love this story. It is so funny.
I need to back up the story. Before you tell the story, I need to back it up. But what were you going to say?
Well, one thing I wanted to say is the watch falling into the banana bread is hilarious, because, like, I can't even imagine how that happened. Like, the logistics are, like... Like,
he was up in there, dude.
I don't even know. It's just funny.
He was up Grandpa in there. Was up in there. Lila?
I guess. He's scraping down the sides and he's the wash.
I don't know. Don't ask me. But he knew about it. He told the chef, and there's nothing anybody could do about it. You know, luckily the banana bread was sliced. So, like, if it, like, it would be before it would be sent out to the kitchen. But, I mean, yeah, Dad was up in there, dude. And what else is there to say? So when I went to culinary school, I took a 6-month course, and I would do it at night, and I would work in the shop during the day, and then I'd take the culinary school at night, because I had to afford it. You know, I couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford to just stop working, you know, at rent to pay and all this stuff. So, and I loved it. And your mom loved it too, because I would cook whatever the class schedule is. We'd have a lecture in the beginning, and then we'd have a menu where we build. And then we would eat it, clean up, and take everything home. So every night I was taking some stuff home to your mother that was like bananas. Like, it was wild. I would bring, and that was the thinnest I ever was, because I wasn't eating any carbs. It was just like all high fat, all meat, and I was just stuffed, and it was bananas. I was just like a string bean. You know that picture where I was flipping the pancake?
Yeah, and you've got like a diet,
I was
Dr.
like
Pepper
I was
shit.
rail thin.
Yeah. And
no, not when I was in culinary school. Not in culinary school, I don't think. By the time I got to culinary school, I had stopped. Because, and the other thing is the smoking and cooking, it doesn't work because you lose your sense of taste. So, but college, it was a problem. So, and I also remember in culinary school, I didn't smoke because it was a long way to go for a smoke break, and I wasn't going to ride on the elevator for a smoke break. That wasn't going to happen. And I didn't want the whites to smell like smoke. I definitely quit before that. You know, the first part is you're doing just basic cooking and learning about the different types. And then there's a section where you do pastry, and I hated pastry. And a lot of it was because my dad was, you know, he was making banana breads at the goddamn whatever. So we had a section where it was the croissant section. And our teacher said to us, before we start this, there's a proper way to say croissant and an improper way to say croissant. So we're going to sit here and we're going to say it the right way, because I do not want to hear anyone saying croissant. I don't want to say anyone saying crescent rolls. We're going to say it properly. If you're in my class, you're going to say it right. So we're sitting around and she says, it's croissant, no T, croissant, croissant. We're all sitting around like a bunch of ducks. saying croissant, 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 croissant. And then anytime, you know, we would, you know, I remember one weekend, your mom and I went to a brunch place and they were selling French toast croissant. And I was telling the teacher about it and she freaked, and I was saying, it's really good. And she freaked out at me saying, croissant are not meant to be, you know, fucked around with. She didn't say that, but you know what I'm saying. They're not meant to be adulterated. They're perfect as they're all, as they are. What an abomination. And croissant, croissant, croissant. So we had to say croissant, right? I felt like a moron. I mean, I'm a New York dude. I don't really put on airs. I don't really like pretend like I know the right pronunciation of fucking things. But at the same time, my teacher's like, I don't want to hear anyone saying anything other than croissant, right? So I'm beaten into croissant.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now tell the story.
Right. Well, here's another piece of backstory. Is I think we had just come back from visiting Paris for like, it was, I mean, I hadn't been, you hadn't been there in like decades, and it was my first time being there. Anyways, so, you know, we're
croissant heaven
or whatever the fuck. By the way, we got plenty of customers who only say croissant and they only want the plain ones because they don't like the other flavors.
Well, what does your baker say? What does your baker call them?
Anyways.
Yeah.
We'll just say croissants because, you know, we're Americans. None of us are French. We don't fucking know. We just make them. And the other thing is I would also like to point out is the type of croissants that we're making are not necessarily, they're European. They're not necessarily French. Okay.
What's the difference between French and European?
So, you know, well, because in Italy, they also make different types of croissants. It's a fucking thing. I don't know. But we're not telling people they're French, so we got to pass.
if you're like, I don't know. I don't know. Don't cut it for that food miner. You know what I'm saying?
But anyways, so this was around the time that the
Dominic
Cronin
Ansel.
Had been released.
Dominique.
And,
I think it's
Dominique.
Dominique
Ansel.
I fucked it up. But he was known for making these cronuts.
He had just come up with it. And, you know, it's like you take the croissant dough and then you make it in the shape of a donut and you fry it. So it looks like a donut, but it's really like a croissant.
Yeah.
And then you probably roll it in sugar and whatever. And so, you know, Dunkin' Donuts gets right up on that. And they're like, we're going to sell the shit out of those. But they don't tell any of their employees that there's going to be, like, pretentious white dudes who want to order a croissant donut. So we just come back from Paris. And, you know, we just hear about the Corona and we got to go try it. So we go down to our local Dunkin' Donuts and this poor fucking like 15-year-old is listening to you just say like trying to explain the Corona being like it's like a croissant, but it's a donut. And he's like, I don't know what you're saying. And like you guys can't understand each other. He brings out the fucking manager. Like,
as I remember,
it wasn't even
he
good.
I said, are you guys selling them cronuts? And he goes, well, what do you mean? I said, you know, the cronuts. And he just looks at me, kind of crinkled his eyes. I said, you know, it's a croissant donut. And he goes, a what? He goes, a what? And he started smiling like, well, what did you say? And then he just starts making fun of me saying croissant. And he's just like, and I'm like, what'd you say?
That's fucking funny.
And every time I say it, I'm thinking about my professor screaming at me. And then this kid is just like looking at me like I'm the biggest douchebag of all time. And I'm like, let's just get the fuck out of here. That story is, I was so mortified, but I'm glad it is a source of your entertainment. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
But funny enough, I was thinking yesterday about you coming on and I was thinking about my dad and stuff like that and how crazy it would be. The one thing we got to figure you and I have a journey. You and I have a journey and it's going to be hard. There's two things that I wish I had from my father. And, you know, when he died, his wife got everything. I'm not going to talk about it, but there's two things. One was he had a kukri, a Gurkha knife that he brought back from India in World War II. That is something that's always been kind of a prized possession. I always wanted it. The other thing is he's got a recipe. He made the best apple tart. This apple tart, and we're going to have to figure it out. This is going to be a lifetime journey that you and I are going to have to do some research. It was a apple tart that was so goddamn good. And thinking about what I remember, and he never gave me the recipe, and I can only describe it. And we're going to have to just like, mm-hmm. it's going to be something that we're going to, it's going to be trial and error, but it's a visual. Like, I know there's a lot of parts about it that I know. One of the things is he made the dough and okay. he would grind up almonds into the dough. I don't know if that's normal.
Almonds or walnut?
Ooh, that's I a, feel like that's one time a good you told ass me question walnut. Right there. Now that you're right.
I feel like almonds would make sense, but it just depends. Like, I feel like walnuts would
I think you're
like
right.
Anything.
I think it is walnuts. I think they're walnuts ground into, because it was a butter dough that he would refrigerate. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. He would roll it out, and then he would put it in the refrigerator or the freezer. I can't remember. But I definitely remember that part of the dough was, I think you're right. I think it was a walnut. And that would make sense, because it wasn't an...
Well, I just feel like that's what
I would,
well,
you know,
I think that you're right.
And then I don't believe that it was blind. I was trying to figure out if it was blind baked or not. Now, he had a tart pan that was one of those thin, long, flimsy ones that has like a ripple on around the side. And then it has a bottom that
you can pop
the whole thing out. And then it
yeah,
I part of yeah. me thinks that it might have been blind baked. But now I think that it wasn't, because I'm not 100% sure. And I don't believe there was custard inside. So if there was custard inside, then it would have been blind baked. And I'm part of me wants to say that there was frangipane. He definitely didn't.
Yeah.
He would mandolin the apples, and he'd make like a big giant floret. And there was for sure apricot glaze on the top. But there was definitely something in between the apples. And the apples were not cooked, because if you cooked them, they were so thin. There was no reason to cook them, but if you did cook them, you wouldn't be able to kind of neatly put them around in as that rosette. You know what I mean? That is the one recipe. And it was a banger. He called it tarte de tan. It was not a true tarte de tan. You take your apples and then you saute it in butter and sugar, and then you put the puff pastry on top of the pan, bake the whole thing, and then you flip it over. That's a true tarte de tan. We got to do one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you've
it's
made
easy,
a few
it's,
of those.
It's
the
easiest thing during COVID. I know. I definitely made a couple. But he would call it a tarte de tan, but it was clearly not a tarte de tan. He also did a pear variation of it. These are the best goddamn tarts. And then when you cut a slice, it held perfectly. Like, it was like a perfect. Like, if you cut a slice, it was perfect, and it was rich, and it was the crust was flaky and buttery, but it wasn't too flaky and buttery. I don't like it when it's super flaky. I like it. Everything about it was just awesome. And that is one of the things, like, the Gurkha knife would be sweet, but that recipe would be like, being able to give that recipe to you would have been a monster, because you are a very good baker. You're a very good cook too. And it was like, that is the one like bridge to generations that I wish I had. So we're going to have to figure it out.
Yeah. You've been talking about this.
Did I ever tell you about the last apple version we had? It was for your birthday. You were one or two. And he brought one down and he put it on top of the refrigerator. We had a party for you. You were one, two, or three. I can't remember. They brought you the shittiest gifts, by the way. They brought you
old, used
colored pencils. It was just like, bro, give me a fucking... I mean, it was like, I know we're artists, but I mean, you could do better than this, some bullshit.
Yeah, it was a bullshit present for a kid.
It was a bullshit. Used colored pencils. We could do better than that. Come on, Ben Fader. Let's go. I mean, come on. Go somewhere.
Yeah, whatever.
Put some work in, a little bit of work. Something. Do a drawing. Something. Give him old ass. Whatever. So he takes the apple tart. He asked what we bring. He loved to bring an apple tart. It was all fired up. He put the apple tart on top of the refrigerator, but he didn't put it far enough back. So a little of the edge of the tart was on top of the door of the freezer, right? So your refrigerator's on the bottom, your freezer's on the... Our old refrigerator, the refrigerator's on the bottom, the freezer's on the top, and there's the door is flush with the top of the... The top of the door is flush with the top of the refrigerator. The fridge is on the bottom, and the freezer's on the top, right? So when you put something on top, if you put it so it's touching the door of the freezer, there's connection. You know what I'm saying? So he didn't put it high enough. He didn't put it far enough back. So he put it to the point where the part of the tart and probably part of the bottom that, you know, comes up, you know, the bottom comes up. caught the the freezer, and when Hillary opened the freezer, the whole goddamn thing hit the floor. And he looked at her like he looked at your mother like she had just, you know, shot him with a gun. I mean, it was like she hit over the head with a baseball bat. He looked at her like it was the worst betrayal he had ever had in his life. And the fucking thing was on the floor. And it was like, and he was pissed, and your mother was obviously mortified. Obviously, she's running a party. You can't, like, you know, he didn't put it in a good spot. I believe that he didn't put it in a good spot. He always blamed your mother about that. And I think that he probably felt like, you know, in her mind, I know she knows that he never liked me ever since I dropped that fucking cake. Look, he got his own problem. My opinion is he didn't put it in a good spot, but I will never forget that. And that was the last one we ever had. And I definitely remember parts of it that didn't hit the floor. We ate for sure. There's no way. It was such a good fucking tart. And you and I got to figure that one out. That one.
Yeah, definitely. You know, mom still remembers that, like, embarrassment.
It wasn't your mother's fault. It happens, but it was like, it happened to the wrong people. It's really what it came down to. So
right.
We're all fired up. You're getting ready to go back to college. Are you excited to go back to college?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm super excited. I feel like, you know, I kind of know what to expect a little bit more. I've already picked my classes and I'm excited about them. And then, like, I might even get, I'm in an interview for this job that's, like, close to my school, and they do some patisserie and stuff. So who knows? I don't know. I would say that, like, some of my goals for this year is to get more involved in stuff outside of classes, you know, like, you know, clubs and whatever, and meet some more people and, you know, try new things. You know, I feel like my first year, like, I definitely, like, you know, it was kind of definitely, like, parts of it were rough to adjust to, but, like, I want to dig in a little
more. It was
more,
a good summer.
You know?
It was a great summer. As far as I'm concerned, it was a really great summer. I had a really great time. And I tell you what, I think we're going to remember the 4:30 in the morning. The best part is now your mother is hilarious. She gets up with me and she doesn't have to go to work that early. So she gets up, she comes downstairs and she starts whistling the Olympics theme, and she turns on the Olympics immediately. She gets her.
Yeah, we watched the Olympics
at
4:30 in
the
morning.
She'll be downstairs whistling the theme song of the Olympics while I'm trying to get your breakfast ready. And she turns around, she's at the breakfast table, and she's whistling, watching the Olympics. It's hilarious. Now, listen, we've come to the part of the show where some of the listeners have got questions for you. I put the bat signal out on Instagram. Go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram if you want to interact with the show. Ask people if they want to ask any questions to my co-host, Lila Fader. And I'm surprised. Some of my friends are stupid, but some of the questions are horrible. But some of the questions are pretty good. So are you ready for some of the questions? All right. These are for you directly.
I'm ready.
Well, I might as well read the one of the dumb ones. My friend Sunset Forge, my guy Sunset Forge writes, "Who's your daddy and what does he do?" That is an old Arnold Schwarzenegger line that they play on Howard Stern all the time. So, you don't even have to answer that one. You know who it is. Next one comes from my man, Messimer Works. Messimer Works says, "Who are your favorite bass players?" You are also, one of the things that is really cool is during COVID, you learned how to play the bass. Do you have any favorite bass players?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I really love Thundercat. Funny enough, well, remember that time when you and I went to go see that
horrible
Thundercat concert? Yeah, it was awful. But I will say, when you listen to his stuff on Spotify, it's great. He's a really talented bassist, you know. He's definitely, like, he's on some of my favorite songs of all time. He's worked with, you know, like Steve Lacy and, like, all these people on the internet, and I love him. So I would definitely say, I'm also just, like, that genre of music is my favorite to play, you know, like, R&B and, like, soul and funk and stuff. So he's, like, up there for me. Who else? I guess I really love a lot of the bass lines in the Strokes, and I also love the bass player in the Rolling Stones. Like, that's that band is crazy because it's like, you know, typically, and I'm not going to do a good job at explaining this, but like the bass playing is like definitely unique to like a lot of ways that most bass players play, like in context of the band. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm not gonna disagree with you. Rolling Stones, greatest band of all time. Next one comes from Josh Scott Knives, my friend Josh Scott. He says, "Don't lie for your old man's sake. Is the West Coast the best coast?" You can be honest. I'm not gonna.
I have to think though, because I don't think it's the best coast. I mean, to be fair, I have spent way more years of my life living on the East Coast than years on the West Coast. So, who knows? But I will say that one of the hardest parts about college was adjusting to, like, not being around fucking, like, New York Italians and Jews and Irish people all the time. And, like, the culture is just so different when you live in California than compared to, like, Westchester and New York. Like, it's a completely different thing. It was just, like, I feel like I was coming from somewhere totally different.
Are you saying that there are no Italian-Americans? Totally that whole Italian thing? No Italians in California?
I'm saying that's exactly what I'm saying. Wow. That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, here's a great story. I love to my roommate. Fucking love her. She's not from either coast, so she wouldn't know this, but anyways, it was my birthday, and I spent my first birthday in college by myself, and I think you had called me up when I was hanging out with my roommate, and, you had, like, sent me something in the mail or something, and you were like, I sent you a little, like, gabagool in the mail, and I was like, you know, I know what that means. It means some dough, you know? I was psyched. And my roommate overheard on the phone, and she's like, "What is gabagool?" And I was like, "What do you mean, what is it?" And she had just never heard of gabagool before. And she thought you were saying, like, gobbledygook? Like, I think that's what she thought you meant. And she didn't know about any of the cured
just
meats.
To let our listeners know, it's hilarious. I am a quarter Italian, so the San Giovanni family lives strong in my blood. Only a little bit in yours. Just not as much. Not as much. So I appreciate that. That's funny. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. It was hilarious.
Look, they got to go somewhere. New York is the place to be, I guess. I mean, maybe it's like, you know, who knows? You've gotten your fix of Italian American food while you're here, right? All right. Next question.
Definitely.
Let's go with Rosendahl Works. I'm going to just change this up a little bit. He says, is the car driver's license test, and this guy, I think Rosendahl Works is from South Africa, is the car driver's license test in America for any car, or do you have to, is it have to be automatic? There you go, Rosendahl. I don't fucking know. Here's what I would say. Do you remember taking your road test?
Yes, I remember. I don't even want to say it because it's so embarrassing. But just I was so nervous for that test, and I remember like we had I didn't start driving until my senior year of high school, but I had my permit for a while, and I remember you taking me to the test, and you like. You fucked up the parking or whatever, and like, of course, like in fader fashion, the driver instructor is like
he's honking
at mad
me.
At you.
He was honking at me,
and
waving his hand like, "You're not supposed to be here."
And it was like, oh, it was brutal. And then I remember like you know we'd been practicing my parallel parking, and we'd been going on every weekend to practice driving and stuff, and. You know, it ended up being fine, but
what did he say? Your demerits were like weird. What did he say?
My parallel parking and my K turn or whatever was fine. But I think like I was like 1 point above from failing, I'm pretty sure. But I think like I didn't turn wide enough, or I don't know.
But didn't they
bullshit.
Say something
but
like
I passed the first time?
You lost. There wasn't as much awareness or something like that. It was like something they don't teach you.
I don't know. Some bullshit. I don't know. I'm driving, baby. So.
legally, ladies and germs, and which comes to the next one, my good friend Ben Stewart, another top five favorite guest on the podcast, wants to know, and we're gonna answer this the way you answer it. Are drugs cheaper in California than in New York? You're supposed to say I wouldn't know. Would be the, just to be as your father.
I don't know.
Are you seeing a lot of dispensaries out in California?
Yeah, dispensaries all over the place.
And then have to be a narc, but the drug use is different now than when I was in college. When I was in college, there were not pills. There was a very, very small amount of cocaine. I'm in the middle of Ohio, so it's like it was mostly weed and beer. What are the drugs of choice at your college? And you don't have to be a narc if you don't want to.
Well, I am 19, but I will say people definitely smoke a lot of weed. And I think it's probably just like, I don't know, it's just the, I don't know.
Really?
Ketamine has become a really big thing.
Stay away from that.
Yeah.
Oof. Jesus. And, what is Hunter Thompson going to come back from the grave, for Christ's sakes? I want to go to a party. Let me bring my sack of oranges and ketamine. Jesus Christ, Los Angeles, chill out. Some of you guys need to calm down. Ketamine? The fuck do you get ketamine? You're gonna knock over like a pharmacy to get before you get to the party, for Christ's sakes? Calm down, California. Have a light beer. Have a White Claw.
Yeah,
relax.
So, there you
Jesus.
Go.
That's... Ketamine. Yeah. I did not expect you to say ketamine.
Well, listen. Right.
Next question comes from Jeremy Spies. Jeremy Spies says, he's being a smartass, but fine. Do you appreciate how many ad reads your dad does to try to support you?
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Just to let you guys know, the whole time you're doing those ad reads, I wish you burped one off. I was like, it was unbelievable.
There you go, Jeremy. There you go, Jeremy. Okay, yeah. Next one comes from Devin Sheridan. Devin Sheridan says, if the weather was the same, would you choose New York or L.A.?
Well, that's a great question.
That's a good answer.
I think I would choose New York.
We're getting there, dude.
Yeah,
it's getting hotter and hotter over here.
All right.
I mean, there ain't
no banana trees, but...
There ain't no banana trees, but I'm sure there's plenty of ketamine if we look for hard enough for it. Not that we should be, but I mean, we could do LA over here. I mean, you know, more Italian people, more better Italian food. Yeah.
When I was out there,
it was really nice. And the cultural differences between Los Angeles and New York is very stark. Like when we went out there to visit, when we went out to drop you off, you and I were, mom was tired. She was in the hotel and you and I walked to the grocery store and there was a taco truck. Those fucking tacos we had from that shitty taco truck were dynamite. And it was like,
and those weren't even the best tacos I've had. They were fine. They were the best tacos I'd had.
And like the Mexican taco, I would imagine the cultural differences between California and New York, I bet that there is a lot of great parts that you just can't, you know, you just, they're not the same.
Yeah. Completely. I mean, it's what I've been talking about, you know, it's just like, well, the other thing is there's a lot more like Korean, like Vietnamese food over on the West Coast that like we just don't really have as much, like at least in Westchester. And it's so nice. It's awesome. It's so much fun. It's just like, it was just a different style of like cooking and stuff there.
Yeah. So that's good answer. Good answer. All right. Next one comes from Lawrence Lake from Maritime Knife Supply. He wants to know, what is your favorite thing to bake?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, I would say like in the summers, I definitely really like I was doing like a lot of galettes and stuff like in the past over the summers, you know, like I definitely like making stuff with like fruit and stuff, you know, stone fruit season, baby. So we're going to make a fucking galette. Actually, nice. I'm making one for dinner. I'm making a tomato one tonight. And I don't know, but in the winter, Mom and I like to bake a lot. Mom makes an incredible
But she doesn't cook a lot.
Like, you're unbelievable. But no, that's the only thing she makes.
Your
she
mom's
make
banana
eggs.
Bread is undefeated. Like, I remember.
She sent me one in the mail. When I was at school, she sent me one in the mail. It was like, it was awesome.
I don't know how she's taken a recipe and she's changed it a little bit. She's not a cook. She's not a baker. She's a great baker. I take it back. The banana nut bread definitely got me to my fattest. No question. Because I would eat the whole goddamn loaf.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a period, like, I think especially, you know, when I was applying to school and stuff, it was, like, stressful for all of us, and there was definitely a winter where, like, she would make one, at least one once a week. Like, that was, like, I mean, come on. That was, like, brutal. It was great,
brutal.
But it was,
totally
like,
brutal.
Oh, my God.
I would highly suggest that her banana bread was elite, to the point where if you put my dad's up to hers, I think she ekes it out.
Yeah. It's because she's got, like, she puts flax in there. That's what makes it so good, is it makes it, like chewier.
It's not dry.
It's not very cakey, you know?
And then last thing is from our friend Baltic Blades. He says, this is not a question, just a big thanks. Because of her, because of you, Lila, I started baking and I love it.
That's so nice. I have a hard time taking credit for that.
You know, why would Baltic Blades lie about something like that? I mean, he doesn't have to do that. So take
you're an inspiration,
kid.
Baltic Blades.
Well,
thank you.
What's next?
Appreciate it. What is next? School in a few weeks. I'm finishing up my summer job. You know, I'm still slinging croissants every day.
Slinging croissant. Maybe that'll be the name of the
croissant.
Episode. Slinging croissant with Lila Fader. Yeah, that'll be the name.
And then
you and I get to fly together to go visit your grandmother's turning 80. We're gonna have a couple laughs on the plane, right?
Yep. Yeah, we're gonna be on kitchen duty
in Whisk, in old Scotty, and that'll be fun.
Yep.
And I'm really trying not to think about you leaving because it's been such a great summer. We got to see some Yankee games. We got to see what else did we do? When you come back for the winter, we're gonna go see the Knicks. Period. And this. We're going to go see the Knicks. We're going to go see Jalen Brunson, and we're going to talk to him about coming to the shop. Okay? All right. Guys.
Yeah, sounds good.
I want to thank my daughter, who is the best. And here's what I'm going to say. I'm very, very proud of you. And what I'm proud of you about is not just the big things, but the little things. You use your head in such a way that one of the things that my father used to say, he had an expression that was a little bit, you know, basically what he says is, I'm not worried about you. And it's a compliment. It's the most subtle compliment you can ever have. And when I think about you, I always think of that compliment. Like, I ain't worried about you. You're a star. I'm very proud of you. I love you like crazy. And I'm just so proud of everything that you've done, and I'm looking forward to the things that you're going to be doing. And you could not make me happier. Couldn't. Well, you might. You might make me happier, but I mean, you could not make me happier at this point.
Well, I love you too. Thank you so much. I've loved being your daughter, and you know, I've just had such a good childhood. That's what makes it so hard to like leave. You know.
All right, you said it all. Perhaps you've said too much. Just kidding. I love you, buddy. And guys, listen, we're going to see you next week. And Lila, thanks for coming on. All right, guys.
Thank you for
say goodbye
me.
To everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.